The following is a special presentation of the Buccaneers Sports Network. This is the Jay and Keith Show. Two broadcasters, two microphones, and one meticulously scripted podcast.
You what?
Just kidding. Get it, JK? You get it.
That's what I thought was so funny. It's not funny.
Alongside Keith Brake, here's the voice of the Bucs, Jay Sandoz.
All right, we are talking all things transfer portal. We're going to talk, talk football. I got a little feedback, so hit the wrong button.
Yeah.
And feedback. Or football. We'll be talking about that too.
Feedback, a thing we don't take on this show.
Southern Conference news. It was a coaching hire. We'll talk about that as well. So a lot to talk about as we will talk hoops. We will talk football. Maybe touch a little bit on the baseball series. A big weekend coming up. Women's softball, also at home this weekend too. So a lot going on around not just ETSU, but Southern Conference, college basketball. It's Final Four. The women's Final Four is going on starting as we record this Friday morning, Friday night, and Championship Sunday, and the men, of course, Saturday and Monday. But before we do that, Keith, it was my daughter's 12th birthday yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Yep. Getting old or older.
I genuinely thought she was older than that because she is, like, exceedingly tall for her age.
Yeah, 5'3", already bigger size shoe than her mama. And, you know, we turned a corner because she got a lot of Lululemon, a lot of, you know, a Stanley, some, like, face thingies.
Oh, there you go.
You know, and she's like the slays or whatever the term is now. And I'm just looking, and I guess I looked a little green. My wife goes, "Are you okay?" I'm like, I liked it a couple of years ago when she was more like me. And then they both almost simultaneously said, "Yeah, that's past." So they've turned a corner. She is no longer pretty much going to be like dad. We have turned full fledged as a middle schooler into preteen girl. And I'm not ready for it. I've talked to other dads of daughters, and you never get ready for it, and that happens. But here's where I was going with that. It was a great family time. Went to dinner, went to the Shrek play. Shrek was incredible, as all the plays are that I've seen at the Martin Center. And this one, obviously, easier to understand than Cats, so I recommend
it.
And funnier.
It's about Cats.
Yeah, I don't care. All right, so here's where I was going to go with that. So we're at dinner, and, you know, my wife's desperately trying to not let the kids play with, you know, electronic or phone or whatever. And they're trying to figure out what to talk. Nobody wants to say anything. So, yes. And I come up with, I said, "Hey, we'll start with JC." I said, "You're on a stranded island with three friends. Who would be on the island with you?" And she named three people. And I'm like, "Okay, well, why them?" She goes, "Well, we wouldn't get off the island, but we would laugh a lot." I said, "Okay, that's an interesting take." I said, "All right, James, who would you," one of the twin boys who are eight, "who would you take?" And he names couple of his buddies, and he's like, and JC. I'm like, "Your sister?" He was like, "Yes." I was like, "Why would you take your sister?" He's like, "Well, she's tall and she can reach things we can't." I said, "Okay." Makes sense. So then we get to Rhett, the other twin, and I'm like, "Rhett, who would you take as, you know, your friends on a stranded island?" He goes, "Well, I would take Albert Einstein, Jeff Bezos, and would also Mr. Beast."
And
I said, "Son, you're missing the point of the game." Like, I said, "Friends, but I'm curious," because everyone's yelling at him at the table, and I'm like, whoa, kind of want to see where this is going.
Why Mr. Beast?
I said, "Why those three?" And he said, "Well, chances that either Jeff Bezos or Mr. Beast own the island are probable, and if they don't, then Albert Einstein could probably invent something we could get off of it." And I said, "Okay, done, you win." And, of course, everybody yells at me, and I'm like, "Well, I mean, let's go." So then, of course, I get the James is like, "Well, wait a minute. Well, my stranded island has a bridge to his island." And then I'm like, "Okay, that's not how that works. Like, you guys are not getting how this works." And then my daughter goes, "Well, then my three friends are going to be a helipad, one of those electronic tower thingies," I quote, "thingies, and a cell phone on full charge so I can call somebody to get me." And I'm like, "You have a helipad with a helicopter? Why are you calling anybody?" So it deteriorated, but I thought you would enjoy where Rhett, who is probably my best survivalist in general, because bless him, I don't know how he's going to do well in school. He's going to be like me, and teachers better dislike him to pass him to the next grade. But that's probably answers I would have given.
I was really hoping that one of them would just rattle off three professional wrestlers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be great, too.
And not even like – current wrestlers, but like, give me like old school guys. Somebody give me Superfly Snuka, like Eddie Guerrero. Like, I would take those guys.
Yeah, like,
I mean, if you're gonna take Albert Einstein, I mean, why not take Eddie Guerrero, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would, you know, Luchasaurus. I mean, he's like 600 million years old or whatever his gimmick is. So, I mean, he's prehistoric. He's got to be able to figure it out, right?
Luchasaurus.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you're probably not a big fan of Lucha Underground like we were, so.
Rey Mysterio. Yeah, take Rey Mysterio with you.
Yeah. Well, the other I mean, here's the deal, because they asked me who I would take, and I mentioned a couple military buddies, and of course, my wife says, why would you take them? And I said, well, one, I'm faster than them, so if something went down, I could, you know.
Outrun them.
Oh, yeah, and then they get eaten, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who would you take? Keith, we're off the cuff right now. Who's your three friends that nobody's going to know, and why would you take them?
Wow, that's a great question. I would take, Kevin Brown, and I wouldn't take anybody else because Kevin would keep me grounded in the hopelessness of our situation.
He would just let you know it's over. Guys, we're not getting off here.
What are we doing? It's over.
What?
It's over.
Why are you cutting that tree down?
Why are you cutting that tree down? Matter. What's that going to matter? What difference does that make? Yeah, no. I love Kevin.
I think I'll take Scott Wagers, but that's okay. It's sidebar. All right, let's get into
it. You got to be kidding me.
All right, where do you want to go from here? Anyways.
Let's talk a little bit about football.
I just talk football. I did not get a chance to go out yesterday where I was trying to troubleshoot some stuff at baseball. What did you observe yesterday?
I observed tempo. Tempo. Push the tempo. Push the tempo. It's a Fat Boy Slim song, right? Push the tempo. Push the tempo. Something like that. Anyway, that's what they did. Offense is going to run a lot of tempo stuff. Obviously, quick game, right? They want to get the ball out fast. But just in general, the tempo of the offense, when the whistle was blown, they were already lining up for the next snap. And they slowed down a little bit in the red zone when they did a red zone period towards the end, but not a ton. They still wanted to be fairly aggressive lining up and getting to the line of scrimmage. I saw Gabe Thompson working out with the ones on the offensive line at center. Luke Smith was not dressed. Didn't see him out there. So it was Gabe Thompson and then Maeda Jones. And, Maeda is still developing, I think, as a center. Obviously was pretty good as a guard for ETSU last season in the wide zone scheme. And now it's a little bit different. You know, it's different responsibilities, but also, like, snapping the ball. We always take for granted the ability to just snap the football reliably, and that's something that you have to get significant amount of reps on and significant coaching on. And so I don't know that Maeda Jones has ever played center. He may have, and I just don't know it. But it was not maybe as clean and crisp as Smith was, or as Thompson was, or as Seth Williams was, the other App State transfer, 6'4", 300 from Statesville, North Carolina. So there's some work to be done there. But, I mean, obviously the physical tools are all there for him to be successful. It's just can you do that one thing that's going to maybe get you on the field a little bit faster with the personnel that are now in the mix. I saw a lot of Cole Doyle. Doyle did a lot of work against the first team defense, and Jalen King did a little bit, and I don't really think I don't know that you can read a whole lot into that yet. Now, if it's happening in the fall, then you're like, okay, yeah, well, this could be interesting, but I don't think it's an open and shut thing either way. I also don't think ETSU really has super clear-cut ones and twos at a lot of the ball skill positions. On the offensive line, I think they're clear-cut ones, and they're guys that are the twos that are going to push. And on defense, you've got a pretty good idea of who your ones are, and then you've got your twos that are going to push, one of whom I think is Brendan LeBlanc, who's going to play a little bit. He played with the ones yesterday. There was no Devin Brantley. So he played a little bit with the ones and looks solid. Another guy saw a lot of yesterday was I saw a couple good receivers. Travian Watson, the true freshman from from Georgia. He's already here, and he caught a couple passes where I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see why you're a college receiver. Yeah, he made some nice plays, ran some pretty decent routes. And then I thought Xavier Gairdet stood out early in practice at receiver as well. He stands out partly because he's just thicker than everybody else. Like, you know, he's got a lot of muscle on his legs. He's thicker through the chest. Like, he can fight through press coverage. Like, when somebody's trying to get up in his business, he can fight through it. He's got the strength to fight through that. And I think if he shows good hands. And there was one that was over his head. It's one of those that was like, if you're in a game, you take a chance and you lay out for that ball. If it's not in a game, I think maybe you kind of hold back and like, because if you go up for it and you land wrong and you do something bad to your ankle or your knee in spring practice, then you don't even get a chance to compete for your spot in the fall. So I think it was one of those that, like, in a game you go up for it, and he's gone up for those types of catches before. He was someone that you and I talked about offline. Is he going to have a lot of opportunity to play because of just how loaded this receivers room is? Justin Franklin looked good yesterday. But I think he will be able to carve out a spot for himself. Hakeem Meggett also looked good. He caught a touchdown in the back of the end zone from Doyle on a route where he just flat beat the safety over the top. It was not Arnold. I don't remember who it was at safety. I think it might have been Ryan Barrett, maybe. But either way, those guys look good. And Cam Sims at corner looked very good, just smooth, polished, exactly what you'd expect from a guy that's been playing college football for a long time. So those are the ones that stood out to me. Devontae Houston, we've already talked about. He's good. Trey Foster looked good. This team just is so different. It's so different. The energy is different. Everybody's got a little more get up and go. Right now it's early, right? Still, it's practice, whatever, six. So can you sustain that not just for the next week and a half of spring or 2 weeks of spring? Can you also sustain that through summer voluntary stuff and informal workouts that you're just a couple teammates are getting together and throwing the ball around? Can you do that? Can you bring that same energy, that same intensity for 30 days or 28? How many practices in fall camp? Is it 28?
In fall camp, yeah. Is it 30 or
28? I thought it was 28.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's 28 or 30.
6 and 1/2 dozen. Can you do that for 4 weeks leading up to the season? And that's going to determine how good this team is. It's going to determine who's going to play. I was intrigued by just getting to know the personnel and getting to, like, scheme stuff. I'll be honest with you. Right now, I'm not looking at scheme stuff. I'm not looking at it other than, oh, they're going fast. I'm just trying to get a handle on who is where.
There's
what
a lot of
number,
names and faces, correct.
And
that's
who's and who's going to be, who are the names that the fans really need to keep an eye on that I think could be impactful players for this
team. So, when Coach Lamb, who walks by our offices every day, if nothing else, just to say hello, stick his head in, occasionally he'll ask some other questions, and that'll lead to me asking a few schematic questions. But when I've gone out to the field, 1,000% I have stuck my head in a roster, name, where they're from, what do they, you know, position, you know, and then also I try, I you know, a little better basketball than I am at football just because it's different nuances, but basketball, I try to find all the new guys and think about, okay, I've got 30 or 40 years plus ETSU basketball knowledge, so who does this player remind me of? Or is it a combination of a little bit of this and this so the fans can kind of wrap their head around it? Football is a little more difficult for the simple reason of, A, the game things have changed, and obviously there was a window of a lot of fans that maybe have just come on board with Bucks football since it's been back and really can't talk about the B.J. Adigans and Anthony Stringfields and Derek Fudges and Craig Charles of the world. You know, you just it's
but
tough.
But we still should.
And I do, but I think it's harder for people – to do. And it's harder for me to do just because there's just different things that are involved. I'll be curious, how quick we can pick up all this, but also I want to know some of these names and things so that, we know these guys, but also want to try to get some of the backstories because some of these guys that we are learning the names ourselves and our fans need to know, part of that is trying to tell the backstory. But philosophy-wise, I'll just say this. Everything I've seen is on offense and defense. It's just the defense has shown four-man front, three-man front,
yes,
five defensive backs, six defensive backs, five linebackers. I mean, it's just they are all over the place. It is a truly situational defense, which I love. Because they're just, and a little bit of an amoeba, right? They're just going to kind of go with whatever.
Sure.
And then on offense, I've seen them under center. I've seen them shotgun with just one back and four wide receivers. I've seen them in the 13. I've seen them in the 12. I've seen them. I've seen them empty. You name a set, yeah, and I have seen them do that. And so the only thing I have not really seen is any type of three back stuff. And I know it's not a set, but that's the only thing. Now, is there a read option? Is there an RPO? Yes, but I have not seen.
I've seen a little bit of delta, that delta backfield, right? 30 personnel.
Yeah.
Where they'll have a couple tight ends maybe back
jobby
there.
Yep.
Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen, but mostly I think it's going to be 11 personnel. There might be some 12 in there.
Yeah, so one running back, one tight end for people that maybe not speak that. But
right.
Yes.
You say, well, 11 personnel. Well, yeah, there are 11 personnel on the field. Of course
you
there
think
are.
Of it that
right
way, but yes.
But it's one, it's backfield players and tight ends. So one backfield player, one tight end is 11 personnel. One backfield
right
player, two tight ends, 12, 21, that sort of thing.
If you said base, a defense would be the 4-3 traditional type set. If you said based on offense, it would be 11. It would be the,
yes,
if you're like, boom, what are they going to come, what are they more comfortable in? What is Coach Lampra? But they are very much.
Yeah, I would say 11, probably a lot of pistol stuff.
Yes, yes.
Especially with Jalen King, because I think the pistol just allows him to do more things. Like, it feels like that's the kind of setup that you want when you have an especially mobile quarterback. And don't get it twisted, Jalen King is the fastest quarterback on the team. He is the most mobile quarterback on the team. And he can run the football. Now, if Doyle is called upon to run the ball, he'll do fine. But King is the guy that I think if you're going to do quarterback run stuff, that's the player that's going to give you the best the best possible outcome on a given play in that situation. But, yeah, a lot of pistol, 11 personnel mainly for the offense.
I'd say it would be a fun game, too, one day. We get the running back room to – because I've done this before. Do you prefer kind of that sidecar right or left, or do you prefer the pistol? Where they get a couple extra steps, a little more traditional running, so there a couple steps, different vision as opposed to – lining up beside the quarterback, taking a handoff, dead set, hey, where do I go?
Sure.
As opposed to, hey, I get one or two steps, get the ball. As I'm looking, I'm already downhill. So I'd be curious to see because I'm old school, so I thought the couple times I've met with the running back room and asked that, I thought, like, the pistol would be hands down, that's what they would want. And some – it's never been hands down. It's usually split one way or another. And I think it's because a lot of high schools probably have ran more – mm-hmm. Your read option that where you're beside the court type deal than the pistol. But I'd be again, stuff like that interests me that probably nobody else cares about but me.
Another guy who stood out to me, Zach West. He's in a 2-point stance on the line of scrimmage, and that is the definition of size of fighting the dog. I mean, he's given the tackles all they want.
Well, and again, I think because he kind of played that walk up linebacker role in the 3-4, I don't know how much now responsibility wise because again we've talked about this in 3-4 and Billy Taylor would tell you this to the day that he dies, that his philosophy was the front three eat up everything, linebackers run, make a play. Mm-hmm. And all, if you look throughout all the statistics, they're all Billy Taylor guys because the linebackers made all the play. The 4-3 is different philosophy, different thing.
Yep.
There's different responsibilities and gaps and things and occupy. So I'll be curious to see. Because a lot, again, layman is, well, he was already on the line, standing up, blah, blah. No, that is a way to, if he's taking on a tackle, that was not what he was asked to do last year. So be curious to see how he is. And the one thing about Zach West we've learned, one, he came in as an undersized linebacker to begin with as a walk-on.
Yep.
And now look at all the reps and all the what he's meant to the team over the last, now just being his fifth season.
You win championships with guys like that.
Amen.
Like as, at this level especially. But the walk-on that comes into the program that's, well, he's a step slow. Well, he's a step undersized. But he's sharp as a tack. That guy is going to – and he's committed. That guy is going to grow. That guy is going to get better. You can invest time and effort into those players, and it will pay off for you. As much as we want to be cynics about it in the transfer portal era, it's like, well, you're developing them for somebody else. But at the FCS level, you need guys like that. I mean, I lose count of the number. I mean, I was at the program at this level for 6 years. There were so many walk-ons that turned into high-level players, so many partials that turned into high-level players. I think Cody Mauch, who's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now, started out as a walk-on. Dallas Goddard at South Dakota State, tight end, started out as a walk-on. They didn't even want him. He had to tell John Stiglmeyer, I'm coming to play for you, and you're going to like it. And then Stig was like, yeah, actually, he's the best tight end we've ever had, until Tucker Kraft. But like those guys build winners. You need to be able to go out and recruit your high-level players, your star power, but the backbone of your team, like you need some of those guys from the region that come in, they're walk-ons, they're not a finished product by any means, and they become that finished product and they play their best reps for you.
And I'm going to further your point. Zach West fits this other bill that I always like, because a little undersized, maybe not the fastest, maybe doesn't, you look at him, you know, it's just, you know, there's doubt. There's been doubt for several, not anymore. He's been a long-time starter, but it was, we're going to bring somebody better than you. We're going to bring in these guys that are going to beat you. You know, you're not going to – you'll fill this role now, but you're not – and then he's bringing. And then he's beat every single guy that tried to have him, get him out of the lineup. You know, and then with this staff, it seems like he's found a way to, again, to get on the field, on the lineup. Because when you see him on the field, talk about those intangibles and those things. There's things that people can process, run, do, anticipate that you just can't teach, and maybe they're not something on a sheet that you can put down.
Right.
And Zach West is one of those guys you love because he has that it, whatever that it factor is.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought him up. He's a guy, again, it's one of those things, like we talk about Jahndre Davis. I think, you know, Jahndre Davis is one of those guys, like if you told me name a major play he has made, I don't know that I can do it. On the flip side of that, tell me one mistake he's made. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Zach West has made a ton of key plays. There's also plays I could point to and go, oof, you know, Zach maybe missed that. So it is interesting because you need all of those. You need the guy that maybe is the most solid as a rock guy that you don't even think of his name until he makes, like, oh, there he is. There's down there, right? And then you talk about Zach West. Oh, he's recovered a fumble. He's got this. But you need both of those. You need guys that can do both of that, and both those guys have been tremendous. I'm glad they're still. Again, this is a thing where a lot of people thought, even when we've done a few podcasts, I've had a few DMs like, hey, I can't believe that so-and-so's still here. There's a lot of guys still on this team.
Yeah.
And are going to contribute that have contributed from a couple of years ago, actually even from the Randy Sanders era, and a couple years ago, or been with the team the last couple of years that have contributed quite a bit in the George Quarrel era, that is going to contribute in this first-year Trey Lamb.
Yes, Jahndre Davis and Cam Lewis in particular. Yeah, those two guys are back. They are going to do it again. They're going to do the thing, and I think they're both going to be very meaningful contributors to ETSU football.
All right, anything else on football besides we need to pump the spring game again? Will be
April 19th,
Friday night. There'll be a band, some music.
Gates open at 4:00. The Emerald Empire Band starts at 5:00.
Ooh, right? I'm glad you knew the name of the band because I was drawing a blank.
Yeah,
I knew it was Empire.
They start at 5:00, and then the game itself will start around 7:00.
6:30, they're going to wrap up the band. Team will do the stretching.
Yes.
And it is a traditional game. They're going to
play
defense, two teams.
This is not a glorified practice, which I love. I love that they're doing it this way. because I've been at schools where you were contractually obligated to televise a spring game, and they would just show up and do practice. And then there would be a red zone period at the end.
Yeah, do some drills.
We're not doing that this year. We're not doing that this year.
Yeah, this is a full-fledged tackle football. There is a blue team, a white team.
Yep.
And they're going to go at it, keep scoring everything. So a lot of pride on the line. And guys, and you know, that's the one thing I like about new staff comes in. And I know every year they say, well, every position's up for grabs. But let's be honest. You know, there's a few positions every year with a different staff. It's probably not up for grabs. There's probably a few positions this year that aren't up for grabs. But there are a ton of new guys that are trying to make their find their way, if you will, in the starting lineup.
There is an enormous amount of competition across this roster right now, and it's going to be really exciting.
And we are portaling.
Portal Watch. All right.
All right, well, let me start with this. 1,417.
Wow.
Are officially, as of when we started to record this, right, a little bit before 10 o'clock on Friday morning. So that is 194 up from the 1,223 we did a couple days ago. I think I'm going to get my 300, by the way.
Yeah.
Every time I think it's going to slow down and hit, like, a little bit of a slow period, there's steady flow,
You
right?
think at this point, right, like,
how many guys are left to make
there
a decision?
There are like six teams that are still playing basketball because the NIT is still going.
Well, and I will say this. There's still a few coaching jobs that are lingering that people have not made hires. And, I think that will still – I think that will throw a few more in there. I think the team – you know, the NIT finally wrapped up. So that'll be a few – you know, there should be – that should be wrapping up who's going to go in from those squads. There's only four teams left at that. So – I still think there's going to be the slowdown where we get like five or six a day as opposed to like a steady diet of 40 or 50 a day.
Yeah, I think so.
It has to, right? I mean,
it's got to slow down at some point.
Well, we think so. All right, well, let's go. So in the Southern Conference, let me just do generic number, unless you got something first you want to jump in on.
No, I have landings.
Oh, well, let me just do this. 46 Southern Conference players have gone in the portal. No one knew since we recorded, was that Tuesday? Still three at Chattanooga, yep. Three at ETSU, four at Furman, although we'll talk about landing spots for a few guys in a second. Mercer 7, Samford 2, Citadel 6, UNCG 2, VMI, a plethora more than, many.
Jefe, what is it, plethora?
An exorbitant amount of whatever. Eight Western and two Wofford Terriers. All right, now you got landing spots for some of these guys.
So first, we have one incoming into the SoCon, Chase McKee, 6'10", 202, from Atlanta, Georgia, is transferring to Western Carolina from Marshall. His father, Derek, played 15 seasons in the NBA for Indiana, Seattle, and Philadelphia. So the name sounds familiar, Derek McKee.
Yeah.
I
believe he had a cousin, Aaron McKee, as well, that played. That's okay. Total sidebar. I sidebarred you there. Go.
Yeah. He played 18 games as a freshman. He only played like five or six this year and didn't play very much. So just deciding to move on. And is at Western Carolina, or is expected to be at Western Carolina. Three guys going outbound have landed. DJ Nussbaum of VMI has Eastern Kentucky. Tony Carpio of the Citadel is going down to D2 for Georgia College. And then Quentin Meza of Wofford is transferring to Idaho State.
Yeah, everyone else we previously reported, Tyler Rice going to Hampton, Marcus yep. Foster, Xavier, Carter Witt, the most Belmont of Belmontians. The Belmontians? You're from there, it sounds right. Jake Davis to Illinois, and then a long time ago, Corey Cotton to Jacksonville State. So
yeah, it's been a while.
So that is it's all the movement we got. I was looking at yep. ETSU's roster, somebody asked me to update that. Two guys left either graduation or went pro. That was Jaden Parker, Ebi Asamoah. Three in the portal, Rice, Illick, Smith. Of course, Rice now to Hampton. And then returning players as of right this second, including some walk-ons, is Struthers, Seymour, Boyd, Peterson, Johnson, Sisk, Hughes, Merriweather, David Merriweather. People may forget he redshirted. And then Fassum and Jones. So That leaves five, if my math is correct, open Scully's for Brooke Savage if he so chooses to fill all five.
Women's basketball can have up to, based on things right now, up to 10 new players next season, which sounds like a lot, but you think about the five that are slated to return: Neve Brown, Kendall Foley, Courtney Moore, Brecken Snotherly, Megan Downing. All played a ton of minutes, all started in large number of games this season. So it's not like their roster has been completely transformed or depleted. There's depth there. ETSU does have six players in the transfer portal. I think we talked about Malia Kirtner and Sarah Thompson earlier. Those players, those two graduated early, so that was planned. They were honored at Senior Day. It was kind of an expectation that they were gonna make their way into the portal. Samia Puckett is in the transfer portal as well, the freshman from Griffin, Georgia. Lindy Ramsey, who walked on at ETSU, she is in the portal. The Unica legend, who just hit a ton of threes.
Jersey retired legend.
Yes, yes, that was pretty cool. Jaylia Cotton is in the transfer portal as well, and so is Journey McDaniel. After their respective sophomore seasons, they are in the transfer portal. Mercer also lost a ton. Angelina Gonzalez, who didn't play a lot this season, got injured early in the year, had a season-ending arm injury, and was expected to be a major contributor for Mercer. She's in the transfer portal. Stacey Jones is in the portal. Brianna Peguero has already landed at Troy. She averaged about 10 points a game by the end of the season. Keontae Downs is in. And after Chattanooga had Sean Poppy go to Clemson, Hannah Cohn is in the transfer portal as well, the freshman who was just all about the three-point shot. She's in at UNCG. Antoinette Emanopou, who was kind of the bench post player behind Kalise Kane. And then Isis Grady is in the transfer portal. Chelsea Wooten and Audrey Myers at Western Carolina. Mason Marchbanks, Carly Heiger, significant departures at Samford. And Ella Riggs and Nia Johnson are in the portal from Furman as well. So those are kind of the big ones. There's several other players that are in the transfer portal as well that were just kind of, you know, sparing players that didn't get a lot of run with their respective teams or just didn't get a lot of shots up, didn't produce a whole lot. But that's the kind of the meat of the SoCon in the transfer portal right now. And Chattanooga does have a new head coach. Deandra Shermer.
Yeah, Shermer. I heard, text somebody chat to make sure that was correct. Shermer.
Yeah, Deandra Shermer, who was very successful at Valdosta State. I don't think that's a surprise that they were able to get a successful D2 head coach, because I do think, based on the success that Sean Poppy has had, that that is viewed as a job where you can win. I mean, look at Wes Moore. Wes Moore won at Chattanooga. Now, it took him a while, but he eventually found his way up the ladder, and now he's in the Final Four with NC State.
Yeah, he turned down – it was because it was amazing. He had top 25 runs. He had knockoff ranked teams. It was like a decade plus of just winning the league every year, being in tournament, winning some games in the tournament, and just for whatever reason, either people didn't give him a shot or he didn't feel right about the job, and we all kind of was like, when we heard the rumblings of NC State, we're like, oh, sure he's going, because he's had opportunity after opportunity, and he finally took it, and I think he followed, wasn't it Kelly Harper? I think it was. He followed Kelly Harper at NC State, and then it was a little bit of struggle bus first couple of years, and people were like, oh, yeah, should have stayed. And then all of a sudden, he started to get going. Of course, he's got another tie to the areas. Houston Fancher is on his staff, who was, a longtime assistant at Tennessee on the men's side. He was also the head coach at Appalachian State on the men's side for a while. His family, I think Morristown, Newport area, his two nephews were on the student staff of Steve Forbes back in the day. So a lot of different ties with Coach Fancher, and a lot of people thought maybe he would be in the running for that Chattanooga job as well. And I don't know that he was or wasn't. There were Gene Henley had reported there was a big-time ACC assistant coach, and I don't know if that was code, and Gene won't text me. Gene, text me back. I want to know. Was
Gene
Houston Fester in
the show?
Yeah, give me the info, man. So, anyways, it'd be great. I love Coach Fancher. He was always good to me whenever we went up there or he came down with Appalachian State. And, again, know that family for a while. But mm-hmm. Wes Moore, man, outstanding. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Both NC State teams are afterthoughts in the Final Four, honestly, because you're talking about on the women's side. Everyone
playing South Carolina.
Everyone wants South Carolina. And I think Caitlin Clark to meet in the finals, try to beat that 12.3 million people view, which that stat was one of the more amazing stats. When they start rattling off what that beat for a single game entity.
It beat the clinching game of the World Series last year. I mean,
there was one regular season college football game that beat it. Just think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, on top of it, beat like every NHL game. I mean, it was an incredible stat, and credit to the NCAA for being able to capitalize on it. And I know a lot of people, you know, it's very different of opinion. You either, it's kind of like sometimes you get a LeBron and get something like you are either, yes, they're great, enjoy it, or, well, you know, and you got, and so Caitlin Clark's kind of getting that now. You're either on board with that or you downplay it.
It took, 2 years plus of doing all this for Caitlin Clark to really start to get her due. It was like, hey, Iowa's got something special. I remember talking to a coach that is currently not coaching and has not been coaching since shortly after they told me this. We talked about Caitlin Clark a little bit, and they told me, Caitlin Clark doesn't play a lick of defense. I was like, I just wanted to snap back with, do you think that matters? When she can pull up from the logo, do you think that matters?
So
Steph Curry doesn't play defense either.
The question is, does her 40 outweigh the 25 she gives up, right?
Yes.
That's basically, what is her plus minus on who she's guarding?
If she's still a plus 15 on her matchup, I think you're fine. And she was way more than that against LSU because I don't know why Haley Van Lith was kind of thrown to the wolves there. Should have been Flaje Johnson.
She plays no defense either, which is the other part of why she drew that assignment.
There was a shot of Clark going up for a three, and she knocks it down, and she's backpedaling, and Van Lith just kind of comes into the shot as they're panning, and she just shrugs.
Well, and some of that, a lot of people that guard Caitlin Clark, there's a lot of that. I've watched a lot of Big Ten games this year, and if I'm watching Big Ten women's basketball, right, I watch Iowa, and there was a lot of, people are trying to defend her. As soon as she gets across half court, she crosses up and shoots from a logo, and then they look back at the coach like, "What am I supposed to do? I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Right?
I'm doing all I can." And she's just in she's in not just a zone. She is that good.
Just an elite shot maker.
And the fact that Ice Cube's trying to give her
$5 million.
I said 50. Five mil. Sorry, I did misspeak.
Five million is still. I mean, that's still more than 10 times what she'll make in the WNBA.
Dave Portnoy offered $10 million to play in his intramural league. He's flown and wore the jersey and set in the Iowa thing and is trying to and I think this is great. And a lot of people are like, well, this is bad because it's just one – you know, they're not focused on everything in the game. Do you think when they rode the coattails of Bird and Magic and all that in the NBA to get it going – that they were thinking about every team? No, they were thinking about players, right? And that's how the NBA and basketball is always built on players. Mm-hmm. And so if the women's game, which we are a fan of, if you've heard anything that we've talked about, and everyone that likes the nitpick on Southern Conference expansion stuff we talk about, it's for women's sports mainly. So if anyone wants to misquote us and think that we're mad that ETSU doesn't do, we can't win championships, we can't win football, blah, 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 a little trolls out there. We are mainly talking about women's sports in the Southern Conference, a reason for expansion. Football would be fine, but I'm more concerned about women's sports.
And if you don't like it, maybe your school should start some women's sports. Because, but let's be honest. That's who we're talking about here.
All right. I am excited about where women's basketball is going.
Yes,
I'm
the direction is great. The direction is great.
The tournament is going to take a look at again because they've had yet another black eye for that tournament. It was the weight room a few years ago. It was facilities. Now we have the three-point line was the wrong distance on one side of the
court.
That
was wild.
That is
wild.
The Chattanooga game had to have a referee pulled because they had a master's degree
from
Chattanooga. Did anybody know Chattanooga offers master's degree? I'm just kidding, Chattanooga. I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. Slipped through the cracks.
Well, because she didn't disclose. Well, who found that out? That's what I want to know. So she didn't disclose it, and somewhere between the tip or whatever
halftime.
Is there NC State people who are like, hey, wait a minute. I was in a class or Chattanooga people. Like, I'm just curious because, if you didn't disclose it, I don't know what kind of background checks you get. Somebody had to tip somebody off between right. there. It did not help Sean Poppy, by the way, and Chattanooga in that game. They were down. And the new official did tee him up, so maybe he was mad about that. I don't know. Anyway, that being said, I'm excited about women's basketball, the direction. I had a great time watching the Final Four last year.
It's going to be great again this year.
I think it's going to be spectacular again this year. Women's basketball has had a lot of high-profile games during the year. It's continuing to grow for all the Kobe Bryant people that love out there and then hate women's basketball. Then you did not understand Kobe Bryant. That's all I'm going to say. He was a big proponent of WNBA women's basketball.
Who are the stars in men's basketball? Who are the stars? You can tell. If I ask you, who are the stars in women's college basketball right now? You can be like, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Flaje Johnson, Paige Beckers, Cameron Brink.
And she hadn't even played all year. Paige Beckers, as if she would be ridiculous.
Well, Beckers is in the Final Four.
Right. But, she would have played the whole year the way she was scoring, she would have a lot more notoriety. And she may take that mantle next year, right?
I think she is the star next year. And she's already said she's coming back. She's got unfinished business. But you can rattle off
you can go
four,
about 10
five,
or 12
six
deep. Sure.
players.
Sure.
And even like recent players like Aaliyah Boston – at South Carolina, you can start to find some players. But if I ask you, who are the star players of men's college basketball right now?
I mean, you would lead with Zach Edney, and then where would you go from there?
Yeah, you go Zach Edney, and then
Edey. Sorry, not Edney, Edey. I'm sorry.
And then who?
Well, my favorite player, bar none, is DJ Burns.
I know, but like,
and he was when he was at Winthrop. He was anyways.
Yeah, but like all these guys are. They leave. Like, they come in for a year. They're awesome. The last real star, like, transcendent must-see star in men's college basketball was who? Zion?
But, again, he was a one-year. So,
I know.
So,
that's my point.
Well,
that's
and,
my
again,
point.
His size and everything, again, kind of like DJ Burns is making noise because he's a lovable guy in his size, right? And he's put up numbers in this tournament, but traditionally, like, he's not had numbers for 4 years. Zion Williamson came in because his size was so different, and the style was there.
And he was huge, and he could fly, yeah.
You know, it really was kind of there for a while. Yeah, because you're right, because if you look at if they're really good, they're there for about a year or so.
And then they're gone. And you don't really get a chance to get attached to the guys that are trying to grind their way to the top because those guys are going in the transfer portal trying to get the bag.
I think, like, Don Connect's a good story for the simple reason of, like, kind of transferred in with not a lot of fanfare. Mm-hmm. And then his numbers and people around the country started paying attention. So
Grant
he's a
Nelson
good
at Alabama, same way.
Right, yeah, yeah, same thing. Both those guys are good stories. It is tough to sit here and think, you know, hey, because you did used to get guys 3-4 years staying in school. Now you get a year. It's pretty good. You either transfer and or you go you go pro.
And that brings me all that kind of a roundabout way to get to this point. But the reason that women's basketball is growing right now is a convergence of increased interest with real star power. Players that you get a chance to see over and over and get attached to, and you associate them with a team so that when you know that when you're turning on Iowa, you're watching Caitlin Clark. You know when you're turning on UConn, hey, there's Paige Beckers. And there's the celebrity coaches too, right? I mean, Kim Mulkey is a celebrity coach, whether you like her or not. Dawn Staley, Gino, she's not really the most flashy fanfare coach, but Tara Vanderveer at Samford, right? Carl Lawson at Duke. Like, there's these well-known coaches, but it's really about the players on the floor, and the star power of the game in general is just so much on the rise. And that comes from continuity. having players that are in the same place for a handful of years that are able to grow and thrive in that place. You got to be able to get attached to people. I think it's taken folks, just to think about it on the local level, it's taken folks 2 years to really get attached to Neve Brown and Kendall Foley, who were instant impact players last year. We were like, oh, wow, they could be really good. They're going to be really good. They are really good. And it's taken a little time for that to kind of sink in. And now you're going to be at the point where next year is their last year. Their senior day is going to mean a lot more, but also you know what you're getting when you turn that team on. When you watch ETSU women's basketball, you know what you're going to get. You know what players to expect. That is so invaluable in building these brands that have allowed women's college basketball to grow and flourish the way it has. And the rivalry between Clark and Reese is going to create a whole new wave of stars behind it that are going to make the game better.
Yes. I think the, you know, like seeing Amarno Bacot from North Carolina be there for as long as he has been is probably something interesting. I mean, just think of ETSU's roster, right? Assuming nothing crazy happens, you're going to see Alan Struthers and Jaden Seymour for a fourth year.
Yes. And Seymour is kind of that face of the franchise type of guy, right? Like, that's somebody that can help build a brand. You can build a team around a brand wise, branding wise. I mean, independent of talent, right? Like, he'll make big shots. He makes big plays. He does things that make you go, wow, that helps. But that just the sheer continuity of having one guy that's a consistent contributor that's been there for a while and now really steps into his power as a college hooper is going to be extremely valuable for ETSU.
All right, we've gotten a little long here. Just a reminder, baseball Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Tom, 5-2-1.
Yes.
And Saturday, Sunday, doubleheader Saturday, one Sunday,
field
Western Carolina.
Yes, field ETSU conditions permitting for ETSU in Western Carolina. Bucks got a great walk-off win on Tuesday against Gardner-Webb, an extra inning, so that should be a chance for them to build some momentum, some young players starting to come into their own. Baseball, this is a big one because ETSU has won, since rejoining the SoCon, ETSU has beaten Mercer three times. Three. So go out, do it today, do it tomorrow, and then let's do it one more time. And then we can match that number, and that's when you know they really got something going. Now, this Mercer team, maybe not quite as good as last year's was.
Well, and they've only played three conference games. So
right. Not as good as last year, just like us. Jay and Keith, Buccaneers Sports.
Next week, more Trevor Bortle.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.